Welcome to Omla's Visionary Wellbeing Podcast for individuals and businesses to thrive. And in this podcast, I'm speaking to interesting people who are business leaders or experts within the field of health and well-being. I'm so happy that you've decided to listen into this episode, and I hope it will bring you some inspiration and clarity how you can go about your day to boost your health and well-being, to increase your happiness at work and outside of work, as I do believe we all strive to live life to our highest potential, and that we just need a little bit of a reminder or good examples of how to make it happen in our own lives. So with that said, warm welcome, and I hope you will enjoy this episode.
So welcome to today's episode, where we're diving into the world of emotions, because we're going to talk about emotional well-being, a very interesting topic. And with me to explore this fascinating world of emotions, I have Elin Breitholtz, who is the founder of a startup in Stockholm called Sakura. And they are working with emotional well-being, so she will share more about the work they do and how you can embrace emotions and embrace emotions at work and understand a little bit how they play with ourselves and in our world. So I think this is a really, really cool area to discuss. And so very warm welcome, Elin.
Thank you so much.
Great to have you with me today.
Yes, it's so fun to be here with you.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, something in my throat. So what's your emotion right now?
My emotion right now is navigating a lot of different emotional states, I would say, and picking which one to go with.
That's emotions can be like a roller coaster. Can you share with the listeners, what is your definition of emotional well-being?
Yes, thank you for asking. My definition of emotional well-being would be that kind of the deal that we have, you know, found ourselves in as living, breathing beings, whether you're an animal or a human or a tree, is that we have certain conditions or needs or wants as living beings. So if you look at a tree, you know, trees need oxygen and they need sun and they need water, etc. And if you're a human being, in order to experience emotional well-being, you have to adhere to and meet those needs and adhere to the wants that we have through our actions and the way we're living out through our thoughts and, you know, our life experience. And if we live in accordance with those needs and thoughts, we're going to experience a harmony between that state of preference or need or want inside. And the funny thing about this, of course, is that the scary part of it is that we actually have to meet those needs and we have to live in alignment with what we want in order to feel good. That's the scariest part about being alive, right? Is that that's what we, it's pretty much the only choice that we have in order to feel good, is to listen into and learn about what those are.
Wow, I think you're saying so many interesting things here, both reflecting upon like what are the true needs and what are wants, because I think sometimes it's easy to mix those things up. Distinguish between something you want and something you truly need?
Yeah, I actually have this perspective that wants and needs are actually absolutely connected. You want what you need and you absolutely need what you want. So, you know, a want is something that we may, you know, describe as a preference inside. So you as a being may want to go to Florida and study painting, let's say. And if you ignore that want, you're going to experience a dissonance in your being or a negative emotion. So you actually need to listen to what you want. And on the flip side, you may say, well, I need emotional intimacy. But you also equally want emotional intimacy, because if you don't meet that need, you're going to suffer, you know, just like a tree or a plant that doesn't have water. Mm-hmm. So I like to look at it as, you know, what most people think about when they think about want, which may get us mixed up in this conversation, is that sometimes we think that we want things, but it's just because, let's say, I absolutely want to be famous. And if, you know, if we would look into that want a little bit deeper, we might see that it's not actually necessarily the fame that we want to experience. It could be the feeling of being wanted by people, mm-hmm. or being seen. Mm-hmm. So what I want is being seen and wanted. And if I want to experience emotional well-being, I almost said hell-being, emotional well-being. we absolutely need to make sure that we have the need of being seen and wanted met, but not necessarily through being famous. That might be the way that we think we can only get to that, yeah. the core of that want, so to speak.
So it's really about knowing your, like, the truth beneath the want, like to dig into it a little bit more. Like, why do I want to become famous, or why do I want to move somewhere or get a job or get a promotion? And I think we're like living our life constantly striving for things, and that's something that I'm also exploring within myself. Like, why do I truly want Omla to grow? Like, why do I want to build a company? And it's quite interesting what you find when you look inside yourself. Like, a part of me is like, it's the I want to share. Like, there's this excitement of like being able to share and work with something I'm really passionate about. But there's probably a part of me that also like want to prove that I can do it. Like, that's also something within me.
Yes. And what would proving that you can do it give you, if you would strip that down?
It would be some sort of, like, for me, it's a lot about growth. I've come to the realization that being an entrepreneur, the work I do now is really about like taking away a lot of blockage that I have and really trying to evolve as a human being. So I think that's like the core essence that I come back to so many times, is that I evolve and I expand. It's really interesting to see where this journey takes me. So I'm also like, I love the journey in itself.
So then it's interesting. Then you could ask, where would the growth get me to? Is there a certain feeling state that we're imagining that the growth would give us, so to speak? Mm-hmm. And it's scary, right? Because we keep stripping things down. Maybe in a state of non-growth or stagnancy, there's some kind of a feeling state or pain that we're experiencing that the growth would lead us towards. So even there, we could find a core element.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I do believe that we all, like, I believe in evolution or in expansion of consciousness. And then for me, I think there is like this, wow, I'm curious to see what else can I sort of discover in this world. And becoming more honest with myself and being more true to myself. So that's a want, wanting to explore more in this world.
Yeah.
So, but enough about me. Let's talk a little bit more about you, Ellen. You're a fascinating human being. What made you decide to start Sakura?
Well, this is where we dive into the rabbit hole, because I have to be honest and admit to my personal reasons for what has driven me to create change. Usually it starts with your own personal experiences, right? So I've been in and out of many very difficult emotional states in my life. And when you're in a kind of a position like that, there's only one way that you can move forward, and that's to find solutions. And it gets kind of dark when you put it like that, but it's the truth of where you're at from that emotional state. So for me, you know, when I look at the world and the state that we're in, you know, it's pretty fair to say that we're in definitely a crisis in the spectrum of emotional well-being or mental well-being, whichever one you prefer.
Mm.
And, you know, the sad part of the world, I think, is that we decide to become expert on so many topics in life. I mean, if you're a car mechanic or something like that, that's pretty far off from my own skills, but if you're a car mechanic, you learn about how does a car work? What is it that makes the engine stop running? You know, whatever car mechanic terms that, you know, one might use. What is it that makes a car function, and what is it that makes it not function, etc.? And, you know, given the state of the world, if there's one topic that we really should become experts in, or in the sense accessing tools and knowledge about how to navigate, it's the emotional spectrum. You know.
Yeah, it's so true. It's like we are, as human beings, so driven by our emotions and our needs and all of the things that we discussed. But I've never had a lecture about emotions. Like, it's something that I discovered quite late in my life. And also today, I think the topic of mental well-being is really well spread. Like, we talk about that. And how do you see the connection between emotional well-being and mental well-being?
To me, it's just kind of like a preference of wording that I like to use, because to me, mental and emotional health are completely one and the same, if you will. But, you know, to me, emotional well-being or emotions, the function of emotions, are just showcasing where are we within our thoughts and within our focus. So if I'm focusing on war, that's going to make me feel a certain way in my being. If I focus on a certain event, let's say I fell down the stairs, and the type of focus I have on that event produces a feeling of shame. There's something I've done to deserve isolation from my group, for example.
Hmm.
Or if I focus on, you know, something that produces a positive emotion, such as, you know, I am good enough, let's say.
Hmm.
So emotional well-being is just something that I've preferred to use to put more attention on the emotions that we have in our body, because we do things so subtly and so unconsciously.
Mm.
And sometimes when you're on the more of this, you know, like you and me, the sensitive spectrum, we might find that sometimes we even use terms like, you know, mental well-being and things like that to put our focus on where the pain isn't, which is where the emotions aren't.
Yeah.
So the term emotional well-being for me is kind of my effort to bring more awareness and focus onto the emotions, which hurts. They hurt. The pain is not easy, and that's to say it very lightly. But we have to go there some way or another if we want to develop as a species into a more healthy emotional.
Yeah, with the expansion of like consciousness, which I'm really fascinated about. It's also about like understanding yourself and really tapping into the emotional spectrum of my being, and understanding sort of where are my limitations and where do I hold myself back. And that's really easy to identify, because if I'm scared of something, that's the emotion of fear. Like, if I'm not doing something, if I'm procrastinating, it's tied to certain emotions. So for me to evolve and go beyond, then I really have to acknowledge, like, that's been my lesson. Like, I need to sit and like, oh, this is something I'm avoid to do, or I'm scared of doing, or this makes me anxious. All of that well-being has been tied to my inner state.
Yeah. And I think one thing for people that I think it would really benefit people to kind of navigate through is that often we look at emotions like the devil, you know, because it feels good when it's good, but when we're rejected at the club or we have a really bad breakup or whatever it is, that's when it's not so fun. And that tends to make us feel like emotions are not really on our side. It's kind of not our friend. But if we start to acknowledge and kind of twist our thoughts a little bit about how we look at emotions, how do emotions help me rather? So when I'm feeling pain or I'm feeling a negative feeling inside, how is that emotion instead trying to help me to see that there's something in my focus or in my priorities right now in life that are off? Towards, we spoke about needs and wants. How are they not reflecting what I need and want right now? And that kind of it potentially eases things up a little bit in looking at emotions are actually, they're trying to help us. Yes. But it takes a lot of courage to admit to that because it's a spectrum.
Yeah. It's not, and you can't, that's also a realization, like you can't just turn up the volume of the positive emotions and turn down the volume of the negative ones. Like when you start feeling emotions and tapping into them, and my way has been to just sit with them. Like I feel them more strongly when I don't distract myself, I'm just with the emotion. And that has become clear that everything expands. Like when I'm positive, I'm much more positive. I feel much more energy today than I did before. But also I feel more sad. Like I can become really sad really quickly, but it also passes through me, which is also really fascinating because emotions go through our bodies and dissolve if we allow them to do. I've heard some research saying like 90 seconds is the time for an emotion to be processed if you fully allow it in your body.
Yeah.
Is that true?
I mean, I'm someone who will stand first in line for that because, and I think, by the way, that's super good practical advice for people maybe who are listening that, you know, thinking about how quickly time-wise, you know, it can be to have an emotional energy or an emotion be processed or moved through our system or body, you know, given the years that we might suffer, repressing that emotion, it's definitely not easy, but I think it's a very good piece of advice to prioritize and put time into connecting to them. It's absolutely essential, I would say.
Yeah, someone gave me the good advice. She said, just sit with it. And I do that. It's great when you're happy. I can just sit and be happy.
Yes.
And it's it's the opposite when it's not happy emotions. However, I do find that they really pass by. Like it's like this thunderstorm, and when the thunder is away, it's like, oh no, it's a clear blue sky again.
Yes.
Instead of constant gray. So now it's much more different weather.
Yes. They need to move. It's like looking at a child. If you just allow them to be sad whilst also looking at the cause of it, of course, because sometimes they're going to be sad for a while and then they're up jumping again, you know, once it's resolved. But I think that this is really the core of the thing is that, you know, you and I, we're open to this idea of, you know, perhaps emotions need to move and they need to be allowed and they need to be listened to as a sense of a guide. But if you're someone who's never done this and you're in a society who's, you know, filled with trauma and difficult emotional patterns in relationships, it's pretty damn scary to open that box and go into there. And that's why I think that one of the essential parts to this also as a society that may want to evolve into, you know, helping each other and including other people into our well-being as well. It's that the more we can help people to have tools and to have support in navigating through these patterns, I think that's a very good part to this, because it is very scary and we we do need enough safety to be able to go into these spaces. And part of safety is, for example, knowing that it's going to feel like you die because your whole nervous system and your whole being is experiencing a trauma right now that literally depends on your survival, that you didn't have what you need in this moment. And now you're going to meet all of those feelings. And that's why it feels like you're going to die. But if you're, you know, brave enough to go into this space, you know, with the support that you want, having the awareness that, for example, you might not die.
It's just an emotion. There's this very famous Buddhist teaching, these two shall pass. That's a good reminder.
That's a good one. Yes. It's like, yes, we should all keep that one in mind.
Because we spend a lot of, I think most of us spend a lot of time at work, and the work can be filled with activities creating a lot of emotions. So how do you perceive, like, how can we actually work with emotional well-being at our workplace?
I love this question. Because the first thing is that I think that we have to stop living under the illusion that we stop being human beings in a workplace. And a very tangible example of this is, even at the tasks which you know we might say are the most professional ones, like having a sales meeting or sales calls, you're most likely going to be a human being still in that sales call.
That's when you make good sales, I think. Yes. If you are a human being.
Yes. And so, you know, if you have a fear of rejection, for example, that might translate into how safe you feel with speaking to people, just as a very tangible example. I'm sorry, what was the question?
So how we can work, I think it's so fascinating, you know, with emotional well-being, how can we actually work with that? Like, how can we support each other at work?
Yes. I think that the one thing that we have to do as a first step is we have to ask ourselves, what are the lives that we want to live? What do we value as a society? And if we come to the conclusion that emotional health and well-being is something that we want, then we have to start making room for that as well is our private lives and in our workplace. So giving room to something is the opposite of neglecting and suppressing something. So if we're in a relationship right now, and we're saying we're gonna commit to giving room and space to emotional topics and emotions in our relationship, that means that I have to allow you the space of expressing your emotion, expressing how you feel, and any emotional aspect that's related to how we connect. And if we can give room to the emotional aspects in a workplace, that's going to be a jump for a lot of people, because we're very used to you know, believing that our survival in a company is based on productivity and efficiency and monetary gain and stuff like this.
You know, and it's, I think it comes to my mind, it also comes to terms of vulnerability, which is something we talk a lot about in today's workplace, that the importance of being vulnerable, and that is really be able to express maybe something you feel is a challenging, or admit, I don't know, or I'm having a tough time, maybe at work with a project, or actually at home, and I've just been through a divorce or something. I mean, just bringing, allowing all of you to be there at work and being able to share that in a way. And that also contributes to psychological safety, which is also such a key topic nowadays.
Yeah. So how then do we tackle this?
Yes.
Because there's going to be a lot of people who, you know, when they hear something like this, it sounds it sounds reasonable and it sounds logical. Of course we should give room and space to anything emotional if we want to be emotionally healthy beings. But in a workplace, we don't have time for that. And we have money to earn and we have things to do. We've got shit to do.
Yep. So just suck it up and just...
right?
Yeah.
And like, this is interesting, right? Because if we just look at, okay, so we may have tried this now and we may have made a little bit of money and accomplished a few things. But in this country, if we're being quite blunt, 10% of us in Sweden eat antidepressants on a daily basis. That's a lot of people. And that's the people who have gone to therapy and found some kind of an action step that they agreed upon, you know. Those aren't even all the people that haven't, you know, taken an action step in that sense, seeking therapy, for example. And that means that, and as well, like sick leaves in Sweden, I think, at least in Europe, I think 170 billion euros or something like that are 2023 lost due to sick leaves. That's just a number signaling that there's a lot of stuff going on.
And you can tie to, I mean, we talk about the term maybe most common is like mental health issues, but as we've been exploring, it's really much tied to our emotions. And more than 50% of all sick leaves in Sweden and in Europe, according to the World Health Organization, is due to mental health issues.
Yes.
So I think it's like this huge correlation, and then we need to understand the root cause of sick leaves. And we're not saying everything will be solved by tapping into emotions, but we do need to acknowledge like how much emotions plays a part in our well-being, and to look after them can actually improve our well-being a lot.
Yeah. And I say that, you know, people may disagree with me on this one, but there should be nothing in a human being's life that's more important to you than how you feel. Because everything else happens from how you feel. If your feelings signal to you whether you're in harmony with yourself, you know, what you want and what you need, or what a tree needs, you know, that means that how we feel is the basis of literally whether we're moving in a direction of health collectively and individually or not. And just imagine what would happen to the world. You know, what would happen to environmental topics if we felt safer being in our bodies and feeling how we felt? Suddenly, I may not want to throw that trash into the ground because I'm starting to feel connected to my world because I'm starting to feel safe enough in my body. So I think that the crime against humanity that we're putting on ourselves is that we're heavily degrading the role of emotional health.
Yeah, and I mean, just to be fair, I mean, I've been also in environments where I felt like I can't show emotions, and I would definitely don't want to come off as an emotional person. Like for me, you even hear my voice now, like back in the days, I felt emotions were like not allowed.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a shift in like embracing them and understanding them on individual level and also team level and organizational and society, where they, how they play in our lives.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's like what I have spoken about before. Sometimes the healthiest choices seem like the absolute most counterproductive to what you want to achieve. But if we run by the idea, which we have tried, let's be honest, we've tried, and now we have huge amounts of the population burning out because we stop listening to our bodies. So it's like, okay, we've tried that. Did it work? No, because companies are losing money. We are losing people for whatever our mission is in our company, and people are not feeling so good. So it's like, you know, a really practical reference to that might be, let's say that you have a child, because a lot of people have kids. I don't yet. But you may have an idea that, okay, we've got to get this child to daycare because I have 10 meetings before lunch. And my child is putting up a fight and they are resisting going to the daycare. Okay. We may think that the most counterproductive choice here might be to sit down with this child and listen to them because we got to get to work. You know, we have a productivity agenda here. But actually, just using this as kind of a metaphor for how we might be able to think, if I would sit down with that child for maybe even 2 minutes and listen to what is it that's going on within them that make them actually not want to go or feel safe going, or it might be that those 2 minutes listening to that child make them feel seen and understood yeah. enough to actually want to go with you all of a sudden. But it's the scary thing. It's like, well, then I have to take those 2 minutes to actually sit down with the child. But what are the results?
And I think we all, and this comes back to, I guess, is a deeper conversations about things we've experienced in our childhood, not maybe being met when we had those emotions. And that sort of sticks with us. So now we're grown-ups, we feel we're functioning well. And then you have this encounter with a colleague and you feel the same, like it triggers those emotions. And then you feel, oh, I can't share this with her. She won't be able to understand me, or I need to put up a good face here because I don't want to admit that I was actually wrong in this big calculation I was doing or in this big piece of work. So I think it sort of sticks with us and it makes us less, I don't know, just not really our potential. Like there's so much potential in us, but we're like hiding that because we're afraid of expressing our needs and wants and emotions.
Yeah. And this is funny that we're bringing this up because I think that at this point, you know, emotional well-being is not something that it's not a cherry on the top. It's actually absolutely necessary. And it'll take us, you know, whatever amount of years to maybe realize that that's something that we absolutely have to prioritize.
So considering all of the things we've discussed, what are some practical steps that companies can sort of take to start to support employees' emotional well-being?
Well, I think that a really good place to start is to be mindful about how do we create an environment where there's safety in being an emotional being and having triggers and having, you know, fears and emotions and feelings in relation to other people. And then a really sort of practical way of navigating that might be in the first step, creating the environment where that's actually the health of human beings is actually allowed, in the sense of being allowed to be emotional beings with all of these parts to our beings, you know, needs and wants and fears and all of it. So the first part I say would be to be mindful about what is it that creates an environment that allows and creates safety around these people collectively for this to be okay.
Yeah.
And the action steps that companies might want to take from that might be individual. Some of them might want to take in external help. They might not want to be therapists and CEOs at the same time. That's okay. I completely understand that.
It's not possible to think that all leaders should be able even to handle, I mean, the type of conversations. I think it's a good point, like that then bring in people to support those in needs with professionals.
Yeah. And there's another thing that I just want to mention as a last piece. And this is, you know, it might also be new to a lot of people, but if we look at, again, car mechanics, but for human beings, how do we actually function and what makes a human being healthy versus suffering? And going back to the idea of, you know, as human beings, we have needs, and we have not only physical needs, we have emotional needs. And most of those emotional needs are related to our relationships and other people, being seen and being connected,
appreciated,
belonging.
Yes, wonderful feeling of being. And I think that could be like, creating the culture in the company that maybe when you walk into the office or when you log into your meetings, like being seen and being met by a smile.
Yes.
Like some, it's those small things that can make a huge impact. And same as you said, like taking 2 minutes maybe to speak to your child that's crying. It's as important to take like 2-3 minutes and just talk about what's going on with a colleague. Like,
yes,
not to be focused on work all the time, but really taking the time and listening. I think deep listening is also such a beautiful skill set.
Yeah, I completely agree. And also as a side note, you know, given that we're social beings, also a part of our social needs can actually come from having companies engage into activities that will make, enable or help your team to have that connection, truly, emotionally. It's scary, but that means that we can also potentially have some of our social needs actually met in our workplace.
Companies serve such a great, it's really important, like it's bring people together, has the opportunity to provide meaningfulness, working towards a shared goal, a shared vision. I think that's all about like being joined in that vision for a better future. And that company, your company, could be a place that offers that opportunity. So that's a huge potential for companies if you tap into also, you know, the positive emotions. So we've been talking a lot about the uncomfortable ones, but really looking at emotions as something that's like fueling this rocket ship, like if you're going towards something, and you can really awaken that feeling and of positivity of, you know, I have a dream, we know that, like how that unites people towards something. So there's potential here to look at it from that angle and see how can we as a company really talk about our vision, maybe in a more emotional way, like how we're contributing in this society, because that can make people really like, wow, I'm really proud to work for this company and I'm going to do my best because I really believe in our mission.
Yeah. And you just look at a person, like how does someone perform? Like, let's say you have someone who's super depressed, the first thing that's going to happen is that they're going to, like, honestly, they're not going to care what happens to their company. You're disconnected from, you know, your environment and you know, yourself as well. And I think the topic for a next podcast could be the benefits of inviting emotions into a workplace. That, I think that would be very interesting.
We would need to have a follow-up because this has been so interesting. And I prepared so many questions for you, Elin. And I think I maybe only asked like 5 out of the 20. So I look forward to have a follow-up conversation really soon. But is this some final words for our listeners who are curious, maybe where can they find more about your work and understand more about emotional well-being?
Yes. So basically, Sakura, as my company is called, we provide a space for all kinds of tools for emotional well-being and emotional healing, you know, from various states. And basically, it's meant to be a motor in society that helps people to navigate and prioritize emotional well-being. So kind of like tying the knot together, we were saying in the beginning that perhaps what people need is tools to be able to navigate this, just like, you know, we become experts on how does a computer work, how does a human being work, and how do their emotions work. And so we are really kind of creating a space for that, to have people have support and help, but also learn for themselves how to navigate this very essential part of life.
Mm. So really interesting work that you do, Helen. And let's continue this conversation. And for you who's been listening in, thank you so much for doing that. And please share this episode if you think someone else might benefit from it. And just I send a big hug. I feel like that. It's an emotion.
I was just like, I just wanted to really say hello to the people who are listening.
Yeah, connect with them. Emotions are good. Embrace all of your emotions and have a beautiful rest of your day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening in, and remember to subscribe so you get notified when we release our next episode of this podcast. And you can always reach out to me. You can connect on LinkedIn or send me an email on miriam@omla.se. And I wish you a beautiful rest of your day and your week, hoping you are staying healthy, happy, and thriving wherever you are in the world. Bye-bye.